Hey guys, Tatiana here. Welcome to Ahead of the Curve. In this episode, I talk with Steffi Behringer. She's an experiential producer and partner at the creative and marketing agency Palette Group. Her passion really is to create meaningful and unfiltered experiences that both educate and build community. She's worked with brands like Google, Under Armour, the Rockefeller Center, the NBA, and many more. Over the past 6 months, Steffi has successfully brought her talent of creative production into the digital realm with events such as the Freelancer Cyber Summit and Allyship in Action Summit. On this episode, we discuss her start in the industry with BMW, her transition to the freelance world, the importance of building meaningful relationships, and how we must hold the advertising industry accountable through sustainable actions. Thanks, Steffi. All right, cool. So this is episode 7 of Ahead of the Curve, and I'm on the line with Steffi Behringer of Palette Group and Allyship and Action Summit. Steffi, I'm sure you're swamped right now with the summit coming up tomorrow. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to talk to you, to get to know you as well, be a part of your podcast that, as I just learned, is also a recent passion project of yours. So thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So I guess let's start this conversation with, you know, tell me and tell all of our listeners a little bit about yourself, your journey outside of work, where you're from, what brings you joy. What should listeners know about you?
Yeah, so as you probably can hear, I am born and raised in Germany. I have that German accent. Mm-hmm. I'm born in a tiny village in the south of the Black Forest, which is geographically the southwest of Germany. So we are in the three country corner of Switzerland, France, and Germany. And born and raised in a village of about 1,400 people. I went to school, to high school there. Also a quite known high school called the College of St. Blasien. It's also a boarding school where we have a lot of international students from all over the world, also from all over Germany. And it's also a former monastery. So It was kind of like, the first, I would say, influence on my journey of being exposed to a lot of different cultures and people, languages. We had like an international class where, the international students would learn German, and we would also, be part of that to help them learn German. And it was always really fun. And after high school, I went to study outside of Munich in a city called Augsburg. My background is in international management with focus on global marketing and communications. It was a program that was also very focused on different languages. So I was fortunate enough to also go abroad and study in Buenos Aires in Argentina, where I also lived for about 7 months. And after my bachelor degree, I did an internship at an automotive company in Munich, BMW and Mini. I was there in the accessories department, also kind of like managing our markets and people in our markets that are, kind of like helping our dealerships with accessories and lifestyle, product marketing, and sales. And so I was responsible for doing different events and workshops to bring them all together and do training. And that's where I met my American boss. He came to Munich and we did one of our workshops, and he asked me if I've ever been to the United States, and I said no, never. And he's like, we are actually looking for an intern coming up for the next semester, and if I'd be interested. And so I was like, sure, why not? You know, I've been to almost all of the continents in this world, but haven't been to North America yet. And so that's when I came over to America in 2014. I was 24 years old. It's 6 years ago. And started as an intern at the BMW and MINI of North America, kind of like marketplace. And yeah, from then on, it was a wild journey, because I kind of left with the intentions to come back after 6 months and pursue my master's in Denmark, which was already kind of like set in stone. You know, I sent out the applications, got accepted. So that was planned for the fall that year in 2014. And 5 months in my internship, my boss came to me and said, listen, we're thinking about doing this pilot program for our dealerships, and we're thinking that you should be the person managing it. And first I was like, oh, Jesus, I don't know if I should do this. Like, I don't know if I'm the right person to go to the dealerships and, like, tell them what to do, you know? Like, coming out of college, like, having a little job experience under my belt. And it was wild. But the more we talked about it and the more I got familiar with, you know, the task and what they really were looking for, I was like, you know what? I can do this. I'm just going to give this a try. And it was also limited to 6 months. So I was like, you know what? After my internship, I'm just going to do it for the end of this year. And then I go back to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
So you thought, right?
I thought so, yeah. And the pilot program was a huge success. I basically helped 10 dealerships all over the East Coast to change their interior parts and accessories area, where, you know, people would come to sell, to buy their lifestyle products or order their car parts or something like that. And lifestyle and accessories products are basically everything that you can buy, from a t-shirt to a keychain to a mug to like accessories inside the car, floor mats or wheels and tires and all of that. And the dealership kind of like struggled with displaying these products. And if you don't show it in the dealerships, you also can't sell it, right? And so my job was basically to make space for it, to really make it visible and to help the dealership to sell it. And that's what we did. I basically, redesigned the entire interior. We changed the customer journey. We changed the customer experience. I built new business cases for them too, where we dived into the sales history and looked at the numbers of what products have been sold in your market, what hasn't been sold, what is your competitor doing. And so we shifted the entire product offer as well. And yeah, it was a success. We, you know, raised the sales numbers over like 25%, which was big in that category. And so the board of BMW MINI was like, we need this for all our dealerships. And then, you know, it was always super last minute to figure out how can we sustain this program and how can we make sure that Steffi can like stay, because I still have my internship visa. And so there was a lot of things that we had to figure out in like such a limited time frame. But we did it. And all of a sudden, I had, you know, a new visa. I was basically staying, and we extended this program nationwide. We built a team. I created my own job, basically. I created four more jobs, and with, like, four amazing other women. We were running this program for both brands, BMW and MINI, across the United States, and we're covering, you know, California, like the Midwest, the Southern region, all of that. And I did that for 4 years, and that's how, yeah, kind of like how I started my career in the U.S.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. At such a young age, too. I find it really inspiring when people are able to really create roles for themselves, because I think a lot of companies get very stuck in their ways of doing things, and they don't know what they need all the time. They don't necessarily know how to identify what's missing. They know what's kind of wrong, but they don't know what the solution may be. I'm seeing, especially right now, there are a lot of people who are looking at or to leaders in various industries for the answers on how to navigate this new normal of things. And part of me is just kind of like, why would you look to someone who has been doing things a certain way for so long? Why don't we look to younger talent and younger minds who kind of have this different take on things? And there are really no limits to the progress that could be made there.
Right.
Yes.
Totally.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. And but you, so how long were you with BMW and MINI?
I was there for almost 4 years.
Okay.
And yeah, to your point of, you know, creating my own role and starting my career here in the U.S. was, you know, not only because I worked hard in my internship and I always wanted to do it right and perfect, you know, and I did overtime hours and all of that, where a lot of my other intern friends, they, you know, kind of had their 9-to-5, and that was also fine. But I just wanted to make sure that I, leave traces where I was working in the department. And I'm sure that's also one of the reasons why they saw that I'm willing to put in the work. But also I had the right people around me, and I had a boss, a leader that really saw something in me that he knew I'd be able to manage this, even though, you know, English is not my mother language, even though I have not a lot of job experience in years that I've been with the company to really know the ins and outs and, you know, the politics and all of that as well. But he knew that I have a personality that I can talk to the dealerships, that they would listen to me, and I would have the patience to also sit down with them and listen to them, right? Like listen to their problems and challenges and what they're facing day to day doing this business, like hard business of selling cars. And then on top of that, selling lifestyle and accessories products that they've never seen a lot of return of investment. So it was really about a leader that sees that sort of potential in you and gives you the shot. You know, it's not,
right.
There's a difference in like giving someone an opportunity and giving someone a true shot in the industry. And I think that's something where we need that type of leadership more. Like we need this type of trust and faith in people that we see have good intentions, that are willing to work hard and, you know, be intentional about the greater good. Like what is the overall goal in this whole like business world that we all function in, right? And so I think that's something that we need more of, a type of a leadership. And I think young people, like what we see now, shifting a little bit to this kind of environment that we are living in now, 2020, is really impressive to see of what's possible of having young people creating grassroots organizations that are, you know, that have a an impact on the entire industry and business world that we're living in without the approval and praises from the big corporations, you know?
Right.
That's super amazing to see. Like, what we've done now with the Allyship in Action platform is, I would have never, ever expected this to, you know, become what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
But it's at the same time, so, yeah, amazing and just rewarding to see that this is really possible to leave a dent in this industry and shift it,
right,
and change it slowly but surely into hopefully the right direction.
Right. Yeah, I agree on all fronts. So once you left BMW and Mini, did you still move to another corporation, or was that kind of when you jumped to freelance and agency life?
Yeah, so when I made up my mind that I don't see myself going down to corporate life, I was kind of in a situation where, you know, I was also dating my life partner during that time, and I was also kind of really, really homesick after 4 years being away for so long, and I've only visited my family like once a year, and I just really felt like I need to go back home for a while and kind of, you know, reset and really figure out what my next steps are and what I want to do with my life. And my life partner, Nate, who has always been the most supportive person in my journey and of my journey, you know, was kind of like, yeah, go home, take your time, really figure out what you want to do. And when you come back, we'll figure it out together, right? And I had not only kind of the challenges of what I want to do professionally in my life, but also how can both of us, like him and I, start our life together? Because he's Jamaican American, I'm German, and by leaving the company BMW, I also lost my visa, my permit to stay in America. And so I had these like two challenges to figure out.
Yeah.
And I went to, I did a solo trip to Asia, actually, and traveled to Malaysia, Singapore, and Sri Lanka. I visited my good friends in Singapore and Kuala Lumpur, and stayed for 4 weeks in Sri Lanka, did like an amazing volunteer experience with an elephant camp, and just had like the most amazing time of my life, and a lot of time to think and write and, you know, journal. And so when I came back to America, I was full of like, I can do this, we'll figure this out with the visa. And it was harder than I thought, with the whole administration change and government change, the policies have changed, and the timelines have changed. And so I had time of about, I would say, 6 months where I wasn't allowed to work because Nate and I, we were going through green card processes and kind of like, yeah, immigration policies. And so during that time, I was, you know, just helping out on production fronts of Nate's creative agency and production house. So I helped on photo sets and video shoots and all of that as a producer. And it's from my previous role at BMW, that was also, you know, kind of project management production role where I managed a team, but I also managed our furniture vendors, I managed our accessories and lifestyle vendors, and a lot of that I could apply to this new, more creative vertical in like the content production. And that's how I kind of like started smelling the production world. And for the first time, I had the idea of, you know, what does it mean if I go solo? Like, what does it mean if I go freelance and try this out in New York City to produce? And really wanted to go into life experiences, because that's something I enjoyed most in my previous role with BMW, when I recreated the dealership experiences. And yeah, so when I wasn't allowed to work because of immigration process, I just kind of like networked my way through New York City. I wanted to learn and hear as much as I could about experiential production. You know, how does it work with the clients? How does it work with the agencies? What type of productions are you working on? Mm. And I just like wrote random people that I found on LinkedIn and asked them if they have time for a coffee and tell me about their experiences. And that's what I also really love about New York, and I think like the American spirit, that people are open to share their experience and they really want to like help you grow and they want to see you grow. And so I learned so much within those 6 months that as soon as I received my work permit, I landed my first client within 24 hours, and that was the Rockefeller Center.
That's a big client.
I was like, what?
That's awesome.
But yeah, that was, you know, something that in those times where you don't really see the end of the tunnel and you kind of feel stuck and you're technically not allowed to do anything, it's just another reminder to yourself that you have to trust in the process and trust that you're in the right place at the right time right now. And getting this first client, you know, after 24 hours, my work permit landed in my mail. I reached out to some of the people that I met over the summer, you know, randomly over coffee. I messaged them and I was like, update, I got my work permit. So let me know if you, you know, need support on production anytime soon. And that's when the email came back. I was like, yes, I have the first project for you, which is the first holiday pop-up activation for the Rockefeller Center that happened.
Wow.
Like a week later.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was wild. And that's when my freelance career started, so to speak.
That's amazing. It's interesting because I always hate when people say it's all about who you know, because that could that sounds very superficial, but I think that it's all about the genuine connections that you make with people along the way. And learning from their experiences and vice versa. And people will remember that, you know, they'll remember 100%. Like your hunger and your drive and how you crave knowledge. And so it definitely pays off. And I cannot believe that was your first client. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think it's also obviously, you know, kind of luck that you have in that moment that this project just popped up on the agency's radar, and it was, you know, last minute, so she needed extra support. And it's kind of, being at the right time, at the right place. And I agree, it's really about these relationships that you start building with your clients, with your partners, with, you know, the people around you. That's really all what comes back to you. And I would even say that was the biggest success factor in my previous role with BMW. Like, building these relationships with the dealership really was the fact why this program was so successful. Because people, once they start trusting you and believing in you, and you obviously prove that this is, you know, working the way that you say, then there's a huge step forward.
Right. And it's also, I feel like, this factor of believing in yourself, too, and overcoming, you know, some negative self-talk of, oh, I'm not good enough, right? It's,
yeah.
I think that's the first launch, because it can be very easy for other people to trust you, but when it comes down to yourself, it's hard to be very objective, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of like taking the risk, you know, can be so hard sometimes because you do have these self-doubts and you're like, I don't know if I'm capable of doing this, you know, this quickly. And even with the Rockefeller Center, I was like, oh my God, this goes way too fast. Like, I don't know if I can do this. And, but I think it's just like the inner intuition that you have, that you know deep down, okay, I'm just, you know, doing the best I can and I will take it step by step, I think was just my kind of like instructions every day to like calm myself and just like remind myself that I can do this. And at the end, it worked out, right? There's always, and I'm sure you know, as being in the event and experiential world where we constantly are facing deadlines and like pressure with, you know, different vendors and budget cuts and or, you know, just managing so many hats at once, I think it's something that we learn quite well, that no matter what happens, there is always a way and there's always a solution.
Yeah.
You just need to step back for a second and think about what the actual problem is or challenge, and then look around you and see what kind of resources you have and who you can tap into the situation and ask for help. And then you can take another three steps forward, right? Like this kind of approach that I learned along the way that really helped me to, you know, stay sane sometimes in these crazy deadline phases, and not to freak out over, you know, smaller or
the small stuff, right?
Issues. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's so funny. And at my last job, the way that I would act at our events once they were actually all put together and turned on and activated, my first event compared to like my seventh event, I remember someone said to me, "You look much calmer now." And I was like, yeah, I kind of got used to it at this point. Everything's going to work out. And if one tiny thing goes wrong, that's fine. The people that notice it are us, not everyone else.
Exactly. And also, you know, mistakes are also, it's just like the biggest learning curve that we can have. Like sometimes these mistakes are important to grow and just to learn along the way. And it's the same in my experience too. Like there were some productions where I was so lost and like really overwhelmed with everything that was going on. But at the same time, now I look back and was like, wow, this has really impacted the way I function now and perform. Right. And, you know, that has really been a huge push for my, self-development. And I'm grateful for these experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously, in-person events and experiences have really just been put on hold, and that whole world has been knocked upside down. It's kind of devastating. But, you know, you and your life partner, Nate, recently launched Allyship and Action Summit, which I think is a really good overlap here. Someone recently told me we're living through two pandemics right now. It's coronavirus, and this reckoning for a lot of people and businesses around racial inequality, inequity, and injustice, which are all different, but all very intertwined. And these things are nothing new, but there's a lot of folks and industries that are just now reckoning with those things. And many of us are trying to play our own special role in this fight. And it seems like for you and Nate, you've really taken charge on addressing the advertising industry at large. So can you talk a little bit about how the idea for and the formation of Allyship and Action Summit came to be, and perhaps from your own experience, what you've witnessed in the industry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, it's kind of crazy that this whole, like you said, the second pandemic, or the first and the second pandemic, that's only, you know, 6 months ago when it all kind of like started. And to me, sometimes it feels much longer,
right.
Like a lifetime. But also, like you said, there are so many new learnings and like facets that come to surface that are so valuable and like good that they finally are seen and heard. So to start off, how Allyship and Action started was basically when coronavirus kind of like swept over to New York and we all found ourselves in quarantine beginning in March. We, you know, were facing a lot of these challenges that a lot of freelancers and other agencies were facing, that projects were put on hold. Like you said, the event and experiential industry got completely knocked over, upside down. All of my projects, like I think I was working on 4 different projects during that time, and they're all one after another got, you know, postponed or even canceled or just, yeah, like on ice, put on ice.
Yeah.
That the same with, you know, the projects that we're working on with Palette Group. So Palette Group is the creative agency production house that Nate and I kind of like are running together now. He founded an agency 8 years ago in Philadelphia. And I joined him once I, you know, decided to go freelance in within the production world. And so now we joined forces and doing content, experiential, and event production, just as a little background information. And so all of our projects were on ice. We were at home and we were just like, what are we going to do now? You know, the 2020 plans were ripped apart. Financially, personally, professionally, everything was like, didn't mean anything anymore. And so we had the idea of, why don't we do an event and a virtual event for all the freelancers, and we're going to connect them with the advertising industry to come together and to talk about what can we do now during this pandemic, and what does the life look after the pandemic in place and after. But that was kind of like, you know, out of the necessity and our situation facing these challenges, we kind of, you know, thought about our own roles, and that's kind of like what we've always done, like strategically thinking about what can we offer in that type of situation? What can we contribute and help within these challenging times? And so we started working on putting together this virtual event for freelancers. And we called it the Freelancer Cyber Summit. And we had our first event end of March with about 700 RSVPs, I think over 500 people tuned in, and we had amazing panels with leaders and thought creators from the advertising industry present, where we just talked about what does it mean right now? Like, what does opportunity mean for freelancers, and how can they still be part of the conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Because what we've seen, and we work with a lot of freelancers too, that they're, in a lot of cases, the last part of the conversation, and they're kind of like left out. And for the first time this year, they actually qualified, you know, for unemployment benefits. And that's also something that we all like had to figure out how that process works. And so those were the type of conversations we had. And we continued these virtual events every month. And we started building a platform. We started building a community. We had groups then on LinkedIn and Facebook where they themselves connected and started conversations and really helped out each other, right? That was like so amazing to see. And that's something that Nate and I really truly live by and love, is the magic of like coming together, having this exchange and build a group of like-minded people and start a community that kind of evolves over time. And really include them, help them, and just kind of like build with them, right? Like not building a community for them, but like with them. And that's something it's kind of our ethos also from the agent's perspective, what we would truly live by. And after I think it was the fifth summit in June, we had the program ready, the agenda for the June event, and then May 25th was George Floyd's death. And we were, it was, I remember this so vividly, that we were just shocked and speechless, and we were sitting in our apartment and we didn't really talk for a while. And you know, I saw the kind of emotional labor that Nate has really experienced, and you know, he's said or shared that was like for the first time now this whole industry kind of like awakening up, was that he felt seen for the first time and felt heard for the first time. And you know, that kind of like sparked so many emotions for me as well, where I'm like, you know what, let's not do this freelancer cyber event this month. Let's do something about this. Like, let's talk about this revolution that we're going through. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden we were again like energized, and we were okay, let's do this. And a day after, somebody Amy Broadwick, actually from the Avail list, messaged us with the idea of, you know, hosting an event and bringing together the advertising industry to really talk about these anti-racist systemic industry that we need to change. And within a week, we had this amazing team of people together, and we founded the Allyship and Action platform that is now, you know, a source, a summit that we, where we bring together all people, mainly from the advertising industry, but it's technically for everyone who wants to learn how to be an ally and how they can take action. Like, it's really about finding your own role within this revolution and what you can do to help shifting the culture, shifting the mindset, and really have these like uncomfortable conversation about racism in your private life, but also in your professional life at your workplace. Mm-hmm. And we hosted this first summit June 18th, and we had about 2,500 RSVPs and over 2,000 people tuned in. And that was an amazing moment where we're like, wow, we never thought that this is one day turning into something like this. And but it felt so true and real that starting these virtual events in March was kind of like, now looking back, you know, it was always meant to be. Like, this is kind of our calling now. Our purpose was allyship in action. And we were able to elevate our productions just because we started it so early into the game that we now are so efficient when it comes to an agenda, programming, finding speakers, you know, doing all these tech rehearsals.
And it's not easy. Like, virtual events are sometimes harder than in-person events.
Yes. Yeah, it was a huge learning curve for me too, as an experiential producer. You know, I've never thought that a virtual event can be as thrilling as a virtual event.
I
would have never expected this, but it's truly an awesome feeling. And I'm just so grateful and blessed by the people that we have around us that are also just believing in this higher cause and and what we are working for, that we can really make this magic happen. And that was our first Allyship in Action event, and hosting our second one tomorrow, where we again have an amazing panels and fireside chat and workshops, doing a 3-hour programming, and it'll be all about, you know, learning how to have these uncomfortable conversations, about race and discrimination, and how to, understand where you are in understanding what your allyship can look like. And we have all Black women's panel to also hear their voices and experience how actual change should look like. And we have amazing speakers, part of this tomorrow, and I'm sure they will keep it real and honest and really tangible for all of us to understand and how we can take action.
It's amazing, and I really appreciate it because it's an educational call to action, and rather than just we need to do better, I see a lot of this call out culture still kind of popping up. And you're also continuing to build on that community of support and diverse thought and really just partnerships there, and open conversations. And I think that's beautiful. And I really enjoy how, you said this really is your calling now, and you wouldn't have thought about this, right? 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It's funny how in times of crisis, we can really make the most impact and find or refind our values, you know?
100%. This has been a truly beautiful journey so far, and me myself included, I'm learning so much every day. Every day is full of a new surprise, we're not only now hosting these summits, which is like you said, it's the educational piece of it, but we're also building a certification platform that we're hoping will be a standard for the entire industry that, agencies and brands should be willing and open to really commit to transparency, to a better culture, workforce diversity, and just more equity in our mm-hmm. industry. And so this certification platform will be a technology where brands and agencies can sign the pledge, which means the first step is that they commit to the transparency. Like, I, as an agency, I'm going to commit to be open and transparent with my data, right? That's the first step mm-hmm. of even diving into what does the data even look like in my organization? Like, what does diversity look like? Doing this like self assessment yeah. first. And then the second step is I want to be better. I want to be more diverse. I want to be more like increase inclusion, increase equity on all fronts. And this technology that we're building will help you going towards these goals. And we just started a week ago with like a tech team to build out this platform. And we're hoping by, you know, hopefully end of this year, we'll be able to launch the certification platform where we're all going to be, which, you know, should kind of be the agencies and organization proud to be part of this. Like mm-hmm. they want to be ANA certified. And as soon as you are certified, you should also demand all your partners and vendors and clients to also want to become ANA certified.
Right.
Because
it's a new standard.
Then, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Only then we'll be able to create true change and a true culture, like industry shift. If we stick to these new values and promises. And that right. also came really about seeing these empty black squares posted on Instagram
mm-hmm.
and the statements of all the agencies and brands of like, we, you know, our values are diversity and transparency mm-hmm. and all of this, but what does it even look like? Like, what do you do to change that?
And right.
that's kind of what we are demanding now, is really to hold these organizations accountable
mm-hmm.
and to demand transparency. And that's what we're trying to accomplish with the ANA Summit, where we bring them together and have the conversation, keep it real and honest, mm-hmm. and, you know, like get deep into the actual question of like, tell me, what do you do?
Yeah.
As a you know, as an industry leader. And then second is the certification platform, where we then, okay, so here is an option for you to take action.
Right.
Take the pledge and commit to transparency.
Right. There's that educational piece. And then, okay, as a follow-up, commit to yep. this. Follow through.
Correct.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. very, very important. And I look forward to seeing that certification an assessment kind of round out and pop up, because I think that a lot of agencies and a lot of brands are going to hop on it.
Yeah. We have
it's a must.
Amazing. Yeah. It's kind of a must right now, right?
Yeah.
and we do have awesome, people around us that really, really want to, you know, make that shift and commit to the change going forward. And brands and agency took the pledge already, that we're super excited to kind of design this over the next couple of months and dive, you know, into not only the data, but also how can that look like as a standard for hopefully forever, right? We're not here for the short term,
right?
Like one this year, one round. This is going to be hopefully forever, ever yeah. in our industry, part of it.
Constantly evolving yet sustainable at the same time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Amazing. Well, Steffi, thank you so much for taking the time. Before we hop off, is there anything else on your mind that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I hope, of course, that everyone can join our event tomorrow.
And that is August 4th.
That is August 4th. Tune in at 12:50 p.m. Eastern Time. It'll be a three-hour program of just really conversations you don't want to miss. I think we can all learn so much and listen to these, you know, various amazing thought leaders and industry change makers. I think it's really important. Mm-hmm. Also, there are a ton of like different workshops that you also can tune in for 30 minutes. And yeah, I just wanted to, you know, tell everyone that even though we're still living in a pandemic and this whole future is still so uncertain, you know, take your time and it's okay to just also pause for a while and really reset and make yourself enough time for your mental, emotional, and physical health. And I just look forward to have more conversations like these. And I'm really, really thankful for you, Tatiana, that you put this together and give people, you know, a platform and a voice that just really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. I appreciate you taking the time, and I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I look forward to staying in touch and seeing what Palette Group does next and how allyship in action kind of evolves over time.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Same.
Hey, thank you again for listening to Ahead of the Curve. I hope that you were able to pull some golden nuggets from this conversation. Don't forget to subscribe to Ahead of the Curve on Apple Podcasts, follow along on Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and follow us on Instagram. I got some fun visuals and more content for you. That is at Ahead of the Curve with a 3 instead of an E. All right, catch y'all soon.